ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
I'm glad you're listening to the 87th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much. I've got a great interview with Daniel Corey, the writer for Moriarty, an Image comic based on the famous character and a foe of Sherlock Holmes. We talk about how the comic came to be and why it's getting the hardcover treatment. And it looks great, so I'm sure you're going to want to pick it up. Then Gianluca Glazer joins me for news and previews, as always, and we talk about a lot of good things you're going to want to know about. There's so much to get to. Let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Daniel Corey, creator of Moriarty, a well-known name in fiction and also in comics. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Doing excellent. How about you?
Good, good. I understand now that Moriarty, which started out as an ongoing series, is being translated into a hardcover, mm-hmm. which is cool. You know, not many comics get the hardcover treatment, so I'm happy to see that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we are too. It was, we did two softcover volumes worth. We've got 9 issues so far, and it was 2 softcover volumes, and everything pretty much sold down. So there was contemplation, should we just reprint the softcovers? But then it came up, why don't we do a hardcover? It'd be nice for libraries and bookstores, since it's a literary title, and, it's been selling well. So they figured that would be a good treatment for it. I'm very happy about that. So, yeah.
Very cool. Now, why don't we go back to the beginning and start out talking about how this series came to be. Of course, mm-hmm. Moriarty is the well-known foe of Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. So how did you come up with the idea of actually focusing on him instead of Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, it's funny. I hate to say this, but it really did just kind of come to me one day. I mean, I love crime stories and I love Sherlock Holmes. And, well, really most of what I do in my writing are mysteries, thrillers, that sort of thing. And I was contemplating what to do next and, just thinking about how much I love Sherlock Holmes, and the idea of focusing on Moriarty as a leading man just kind of came to me. I did a little bit of research to see if he had been a leading man in anything before, and it turns out that there have been some novels, like by John Gardner and a couple other guys, had done him as a novel, and there was a recent one by Kim Newman, but he hadn't been a leading man in a comic book before, so it kind of felt like, oh, this is the first. As far as I know, somebody might dig one up someday, but as far as I know so far, this is the first comic book that features Moriarty as the leading man. So it just seemed like a great, great idea. And I spent a couple of years actually pitching it to publishers, and everybody just unanimously said that it was a great idea to, have him as the leading man. Why has anybody done that before, For some reason, it still took a couple of years to find a publisher. That's the way the game goes.
Yeah, so I guess once you decided that and you got your story and stuff together, once you got a publisher, then you went ahead and did the story. And the artist, it was Dave Lampier was the artist?
Dave did our letters and design. The main artist on the series was Anthony Diacidue.
Okay.
We also had Perry Fries did color on about half of the issues. And then Mike Bothberg guested on one of our issues as the artist. So, but the primary artist... and the guy that was there at the very beginning was Anthony,
Great. I'm glad you pronounced that, because I'd fracture that to pieces, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah.
Now, the one thing I noticed, does he do the hardcover? There's a really neat-looking illustration of the hardcover. Mm-hmm. It's sort of him holding what looks like a candle or something, and mm-hmm. you really only get to see his face, and he's surrounded in the blackness, which I think is really a cool-looking mm-hmm. image. Did he do that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Moriarty, for folks that read the series, are familiar with his walking cane is kind of a cool kit. And one of the things he can do is he has a torch that pops out of it, out the top of it. So that's what he's holding, is his torch. And, it's a very cool image. It's kind of a very expressionistic image of Moriarty against kind of a fractured cityscape. Mm-hmm. Holding that torch, and it's a lot of negative space, a lot of dark around it, and it's going to be a wraparound cover, so that cityscape will wrap around the back, so it's going to look pretty cool.
You know, it doesn't cost that much. It's only about, according to Amazon, it's $29.99, and that's not much for this many issues of a comic. So it's really a good price.
Yeah. That's the number they settled on. I talked to some retailers about that. They told me that they're very happy. So retailers, please make note. It's a good price.
Yeah. Now, according to Amazon, it's going to be out on May 28th.
It's actually been pushed a few weeks. Well, it'll be June 5th for direct market for comic stores, and then June 18th in the bookstores.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's good to update, because if they go to Amazon and see that, they might be a little surprised. Yeah, because that's really good. I really love the series. I want to get more into the book. The one thing, of course, that fascinated me as I was reading it, you know, you often see things from Sherlock Holmes's perspective, but to see it from Moriarty's perspective was really fascinating. You know, the thing that I came away with that really impressed me was the similarities between Moriarty and Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so often, you know, you often get your heroes and your villains, and they'll say to each other, you know, I'm nothing like you.
Mm-hmm.
But when we actually got to see this, I really came away thinking, wow, you know, it's no wonder these two guys are at each other. They're both alpha males. They're both people who have their plans and want things to happen. And so it's just so interesting that as we saw Moriarty go along in the issues, I guess kept being struck again and again that this was something that Holmes might consider.
Yeah.
So just really interesting. Did you notice that when you were starting to write the thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always thought of Holmes and Moriarty as just different sides of the same coin. I mean, there's so many ways to look at both characters. You know, because, like, Watson is the guy that we really know. He's the first-person narrator. He's really the lead character of all the stories because he's the guy that experiences everything and tells it to us. So it's like Holmes is, like, so very, very present. So we know a lot about him, but there's still so many ways we can look at him. And it's really easy to look at Holmes as a, you know, kind of an amoral guy or just kind of an intellectual that's into what he's doing. And it just kind of seems that, I mean, you can read Holmes as being not particularly a good guy, just the guy that happens to be on the right side of the law. Like, he sees it as a challenge to, you know, bring justice and to work with the law. That's the challenge that he likes. So that's why he does it. Whereas Moriarty just falls on the other side. He kind of finds kind of the joy of the work in being in the shadows and in being in the underground. That's kind of how I think of him, although, you know, there's not much of him on the page as far as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is concerned, you know. So it's just kind of easy to read him that way. I think that's what Doyle probably intended. You know, he brought in Moriarty. A lot of people know he brought in Moriarty to kill off Holmes when he got tired of writing Holmes. He left the door open, of course, to bring Holmes back, which he indeed did do about 10 years later. But, yeah, I think he probably wanted us to see Moriarty as Holmes' equal and a lot like Holmes because, you know, it would take somebody like Holmes to be able to kill Holmes off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really cool. Now, another thing that was unique to me about the series was the setting. It doesn't take place as a lot of these Holmes stories do in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually at the beginning of World War One, and that's 20 years since we've seen Sherlock Holmes, just since he fell over the waterfall. And it's just, you know, I thought that was such a unique place to put all this because we're so used to the late 1800s that when we get into World War One kind of settings, you get a very different feel at that time period. Was that intentional on your part?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yeah. It goes to an idea that I try to work with a lot as far as how can you put the character in a place that's significant, that people can sort of identify with, you know, that feels important in a way. This goes back to an old lesson. I studied writing. I was studying playwriting in a workshop with Ken Yulo, who was he's a million-selling novelist. He was a Eugene O'Neill award-winning playwright. And he kind of infused this idea into me. Like, I was writing this play once about a guy that was having trouble with his father and his wife, blah, 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 you know. It was a nice play. And the guy was a college professor. And Ken says to me one day, why isn't this guy Einstein? And I said, oh, you mean like a super genius? He's like, no, I mean Einstein, you know. And it's like, it was a teachable moment. He didn't really want me to rewrite the play, make the guy Einstein. But what he was saying was, why don't you bring this to an arena that is familiar to us that we can sort of identify with in a way. So wanting to bring everybody, Moriarty as a lead character, I'm like, well, I want to cast him against the backdrop of something big, something people are going to identify with. You know, we got a lot of wars and stuff going on right now. So I'm like, well, why not put it against World War One and characterize all the panic and all the misgivings people have about war and what's going on right now. and, you know, infuse it into the story, people will look at this and it'll look and seem familiar to them and they can identify with it. Because I wanted to do everything I could to get people to identify with Professor Moriarty as a human being, you know, as this person that's kind of a, you know, he thinks of himself as a workaday guy that is just struggling to get what he needs to make it through the day. And I wanted people to see that. So, you know, putting them against this kind of extreme background of history that people know about, I was hoping to help bring people into the story. So that's why I chose to do it that way. And it was kind of nice also to, you know, open up the premise of Sherlock Holmes being gone 20 years now. So I was thinking, oh, well, you know, I'll cast Reichenbach Falls as happening around 1894, and then we'll cut to 20 years later, 1914, World War I's breaking out. So we got all these touchstones happening just in the first four pages of the book that I seem to draw people in. I mean, I was intending that. It seems to have worked, so I was happy about that.
Yeah. That was so unexpected, and I thought it added a different tone to it than what I expected, which I liked. And, of course, you know, in a world war, Moriarty, I mean, that would seem to me as a place where he would thrive.
Yeah.
You know, as somebody who is a strategic genius like he is, in a situation like that, he would really be valuable. And one of the thing that you do, and the first thing I want to get to was that really impressed me was the fact that you always wonder, what would Lex Luthor be like if Superman was gone? What would, you know, would the Joker actually continue to be the Joker if Batman didn't exist? And the thing that's interesting to me is Moriarty's reaction to the loss of Holmes is just so interesting. He just sort of, you describe him as a lost man, that he's not, he doesn't know what to do with himself now without somebody to challenge him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was such a great thing to do about that, because it answered that question for me. You know, what would Dr. Doom be like without the Fantastic Four? What would these people do without somebody to be against them all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And his reaction is he just sort of crumbles.
Yep.
I just thought that was so cool. Is that kind of the way that you figured that if this were a real situation that Moriarty would react to, he would just not, without somebody to push him, he wouldn't really be that kind of a strong person?
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, everybody needs encouragement in life. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I mean, he's obviously a person that has a different perspective on life, different values. He's got a very jaundiced perspective on things. So, you know, he looks at his rivalry with Holmes as perhaps something that's kind of nurturing to him, you know. Obviously, when it went away, he fell apart. So, you know, so that was like his family in a way, you know, his competition with Holmes. That was his family. That was his comfort, you know, when it's taken away. Wow. Just falls apart. Yeah.
Just a well done thing. What's also fun to me is how you challenge Moriarty with he's kind of set up with somebody who could be a greater villain than he is, and he has to take that person on.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for Holmes's long lost brother, Mycroft, which I thought was a great thing. Now, even though Holmes is gone, Holmes still has an influence on his life.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really cool. And so you've done all these kind of interesting things. Now, I don't want to spoil stuff, but there are interesting things that happen as we get towards the latter books that I don't want to talk about. But let's just say that Holmes's influence continues to haunt dear old Mr. Moriarty, which I thought was great.
Oh, it'll never go away.
Yeah, it's such a great thing. And the first part was called The Dark Chamber. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that story was about?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, that sets up the whole world for Moriarty as we know him in this series, and it took me forever to write it, trying to establish everything. But, you know, that we have Moriarty emerging victorious at Reichenbach Falls and then, you know, fading into obscurity as a result. World War I breaks out, and, he gets pulled into this whole mission. You know, MI5 comes along and blackmails him into this mission to find Mycroft Holmes. And that explodes into this whole huge conspiracy and involves, you know, this villain that threatens to surpass his legend and, you know, this whole secret world dominating technology that's going to come to the fore and take over the world. And he's like, oh, wait a minute, I'm the guy that's supposed to rule the world. So he gets kind of cast in the role of hero trying to defeat this, this villain, Gottfried. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a Holmes-style mystery, but it has kind of a James Bond kind of a thing to it. You know, it's almost like this lone wolf detective guy has got to take on Dr. No, you know. So that's kind of, that's the Dark Chamber. The Dark Chamber has to do with this technology is a sort of psychic camera obscura. You know, camera obscura is, you know, kind of Latin for dark chamber. And, you know, it just is a nice metaphor for Moriarty's soul and his life without Holmes, you know, the dark chamber. So, yeah, so that has to do with the whole outset of World War One and Moriarty coming back and starting to become the world's greatest criminal all over again. But he's constantly got the specter of Holmes looking over his shoulder. So that's the dark chamber, basically.
Now, when you go into the second story, which is the Lazarus Tree, mm-hmm. he's actually in Burma. He's in a totally different location, and he's dealing with stuff. And this is where being a villain is helpful to him. He can kind of figure out what the bad guys are going to do, likely before they do it. Mm-hmm. And we get to see him do some of those things in the second part, which I really like. I like the whole story. I just think this whole thing was a great, very well-done series.
Thank you.
So it's just great. It's something different. You know, we read the same old stuff over and over and over. It's so nice to see something different. Now, granted, the situations are, there's some allusions to stuff that we're familiar with, but, you know, having Moriarty in there gives us a very unique perspective on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there are times where he seems to look at the bad guys and go, well, if I was in their circumstance, I would do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives him a leg up on everybody. And I just, the Lazarus Tree was a really great story as well, where he's got, in a different country, he's out of sorts, you know, because when he's in London and he's in place like that, he's familiar with everything around him, but he's in Burma and it's a very different setting and he's got to kind of get the lay of the land as well as figure out what's happening. Mm-hmm. So you've challenged him on two levels in the Lazarus Tree, which I really liked as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was... an idea that I thought of really early on as I was still working on Dark Chamber. Like, I'm going to do another one. Like, I'll take him to Asia. I want him to go to Burma and hang out with George Orwell. Why not? you know, and I had the idea of him kind of meditating in a fugue state and dreaming, you know, the whole opening sequence, the whole first 10 pages of issue 5 with the first chapter of Lazarus Tree. I had that in my head for, you know, probably a year and a half before I wrote it, you know, because... I don't know. It just seemed, I couldn't get over the fact that it just seemed like the next logical step for him to go, because his whole yearning for, you know, meaning in life, trying to measure up to Holmes, and all this is a sort of internal, sort of spiritual struggle. So kind of, you know, the image of him meditating in this fugue state and reflecting on things and, you know, in the jungle just seemed kind of a natural place to go. And I just got really excited over the idea of him hanging out with George Orwell, you know. Mm-hmm. Although George Orwell wasn't actually in Burma until about 1922, but, you know, we can kind of flip my mind a little bit.
That's right. May as well have a little – you can play with history a little bit. I mean, you know,
yeah.
We know he was there in 1922, but maybe he was there – you know, he might have stopped by and people just didn't know it earlier than
right.
that. So.
Well, I think he was around 12 in 1914, so probably not. But
okay, well.
Okay, yeah. Right. That's nice. But thank you, though. I appreciate that. You're trying. Yeah.
The whole story is really fun. If you want something that's a little different, and, you know, there are right now, or at least there have been the last several years, several Sherlock Holmes comics. I mean, he's fighting zombies and vampires and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah.
And so if you want to get closer to what I consider the spirit of Sherlock Holmes is, I think the Moriarty books do a much better job of portraying what Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty was all about than these other crazy off-center books do. Then, you know, nothing against them. I think that's, you know, sure, I guess they're trying to do something we haven't seen before, and zombies are certainly something we haven't seen much of in Sherlock Holmes. But I think that the tone, the way that you did these Moriarty books, are so much more true to the spirit of what Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was doing than the others, that to me the other stuff is just kind of, it's like when Batman is done by somebody and they do a totally different take on the character, mm-hmm. and you look at it, you go like, what? That's not Batman. There seem to be like multiple Batmans going around, and it seems that way with Sherlock Holmes. That Sherlock mm-hmm. Holmes got all these different things that people want to do with them, but they don't want to, it's like the idea is we can't tell any more stories based on what was originally done, so we've got to do something different. But I think your books show that there's still a lot of life and a lot of purpose left in those original Holmes stories, and that, you know, you showed that with Moriarty, I think.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's exactly what I was going for. I don't know. I'm glad you have a take on it. I really like that. Thank you.
Well, it's very good, because I think if people really want to enjoy these kinds of things, and there's a lot of people who still are fans of Holmes and Moriarty and that conflict between them, I would recommend this hardcover, because, boy, it's such wonderful stuff. Now, as far as the hardcover goes, are there going to be extras in there that we haven't mm-hmm. seen before? What are we going to see?
Well, there'll be some new pinups from some artists that I know that'll be in there. We'll have like a script to page gallery, like showing script next to you know, inked versions of some pages. Yeah, it's just, yeah, some, a lot of behind the scenes stuff, early cover ideas, early cover concepts. We had a couple of We had like a couple of completely finished covers that we had for the first issue that got rejected. They just didn't work quite right. But they're really, really neat images, and I wanted to preserve them for people to see. So, yeah, so, like, those will be in there. But, yeah, a lot of stuff like that. We have a good helping of, the gallery's pretty extensive there at the end of the book. So I was sure to get a good page count. But, you know, we got to tell them the page counts months ahead of time. Like, 6 months before the book's going to come out, they have to solicit to actually the book market. So they have to know the page count way ahead of time. So I was sure to go in and figure out so we could have plenty of extra pages so we could have a big gallery section of the book. Cool. So, yeah, that was programmed from the very start. So, yeah, definitely extra stuff. Yep. Oh, and we have a foreword. It's going to be by Doug Jones. It's actually already written it, so I already have it. Doug Jones, a lot of people know, is the star of Pan's Labyrinth. He played Pan. He was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies. He was Silver Surfer in Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. He's a friend, and he's a fan of the books. He loves Moriarty, and yeah, and said, "Hey, you want to write a foreword for us?" He's like, "Absolutely." He came right back, "Absolutely." You know, so, and he gave a wonderful foreword. He had a really good insight into the book and wrote a really nice piece. So I'm looking forward to everybody seeing that.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to have to get this stuff. But you answered one of my questions by saying that it's going to be available in the local shops as well as on, say, Amazon. Mm-hmm. So that's good to do. So we'll be able to order it there. Now, mm-hmm. of course, I got to ask, are you pretty much done with the Moriarty concept? Are there any more stories you want to tell, or have you've completed all that?
There are more stories I would like to do. It's a matter of if we can do it or not. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of depends. Like, the guys at home are all working on other stuff right now. So, you know, it's a matter of some things coming back together, but I would like to do a third volume. I just... we don't have it quite yet, but there's hopefully more to come.
Oh, good. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see more of this. That'd be great fun. Now, what other projects are you working on? Other stuff that you're doing that we should be aware of?
I can't really talk about anything else right now because the other things aren't ready to be announced yet, but I do have more comics coming out.
Okay.
So, and then I have a new series that I'll be putting out hopefully late this year. I'm hoping we'll have something to show at San Diego Comic-Con. That's all I can really say, you know, because it might not happen quite yet. But, yeah, I have a completely new original. It's not based on any public domain characters or anything. It's a completely new original series, and it involves crime and mystery. But, I have that. Hopefully two things, but I can definitely say hopefully one thing.
Okay.
So that's a specific I can get, unfortunately. I'm dying to talk about it.
Don't get in trouble. So one thing I always ask people, don't get in trouble on my account, because I'd rather that we find out when we need to find out than trying to spoil stuff. But, well, Daniel, it's good talking with you. I wish you much success. It's Moriarty, the deluxe edition hardcover. It's going to be available in June, and so I would highly recommend it. It's a great book, especially if you like Holmes and Moriarty type stuff. This has a very unique spin to it, and it's still very true to what I think that Holmes and all this good stuff's about. So I highly recommend it. Be sure to pick it up. And, Daniel, hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime in the future, and when you got some more stuff you can talk about.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. This is a nice interview. A good time. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Stay away from Molly Party. Turn your back and you'll be sorry. Keep away from Molly Party. Don't you see you're just a trophy in his eyes? We between our it's time for this week's news and previews, and with me, as always, is Gianluca Glaser. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
Much better than last time, Wayne.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. I know you were pretty under the weather last time. Okay, why don't we get to the news? What news do you think we should be aware of?
Sure, absolutely. Heading over into movie and TV land, ABC has announced the official name for Joss Whedon's official S.H.I.E.L.D. TV project.
Okay.
So it is going to be called Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And according to the ABC Whedon series, it's going to, quote, show us that not all heroes are super.
Okay.
And the new show is going to be set In the world of superheroes, aliens, and major global menaces of all types, ABC notes in a statement that makes clear that the series will reflect the same approach that animated Whedon's previous efforts for the small screen, including Buffy and Firefly. The show will speak to the human condition through the lens of our very human, non-powered S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, that together we are greater than we are apart, and that we can make a difference in the world.
Interesting. It almost sounds like Gotham Central in a way.
Yeah, very interesting. In movie news, they've released like the first pictures for 300, Rise of the Empire, the sequel to the Zack Snyder highly popular 300, which was based on Frank Miller's graphic novel. This one is being directed by Noam Muro, and basically the film seems a bit different in certain aspects. The overall look is kind of similar, but, you know, in the original story, you had the Spartans trying to hold off the Persian hordes on these land battles. And this is more based out in sea, it seems like. There's going to be, like, a series of different fights, and it's going to deal with the Athens as opposed to the Spartans. And they're going to be these naval engagements, basically, against a much larger Persian on sea-going force. This movie is set to debut August 2nd, 2013, not too far away.
Wow.
I know. Wasn't there supposed to be like a actual book sequel to 300?
I thought so. I never saw one come out.
Yeah, I thought Dark Horse, like during one of the early Dark Horse Presents anthologies, had like a sneak peek or something of it.
Weird.
Yeah. Oh, well. Not anytime soon. Probably not before the movie.
No.
Yes. All right. And director Mark Webb, who's doing The Amazing Spider-Man number 2, recently tweeted an image of a police officer next to a car on fire with the message, "This is what happens when you try to give Electro a ticket." Electro, of course, is being played by Jamie Foxx in this film, and it's going to come out next year, May 2nd.
Right around the same time that Iron Man's coming out this year.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting. I don't know if you knew about this. Sci-Fi had announced a series of new television shows coming out. One of the ones, the most high-profile ones, is the Top Cow Productions' The Test in development. The series was created by Top Cow president Matt Hawkins. Oh, wait, is he the he's like, I think, editor or publisher for Top Cow.
Okay.
But Matt Hawkins is going to be, was one of the creators for that, as well as Joshua Helfialco. He was a co-creator for The Test. It's going to be adapted by Robert Zemeckis and Jack Rapp. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's R-I-P-K-E.
Okay.
The Walking Dead executive producer, David Alpert, will executive produce this series, along with Circle of Confusion's Rick Jacobs, Matt Hawkins, and Mark Silvestri. Sci-Fi is also doing two miniseries based on the science fiction works of We Have Larry Niven's Ringworld, and Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End in development. And then there's going to be a reality series, 6 episodes, involving cosplay. It's going to premiere August 27th. And then another reality series, Pandemonium, from the producer of The Jersey Shore. And it's going to follow fans living together in an L.A. apartment complex. They didn't contact me for it. Oh, well. So, some interesting stuff there coming out from Sci-Fi, you know, especially the Top Cow. That's pretty big for them.
Yeah, it's going to be something. I think it's one of the first ones that's actually seen, gotten the light of day on the visual medium.
Well, they've had Witchblade back over 10 years ago, you know, and that was a very successful show till the star kind of fell off the wagon.
Yeah.
Kind of hurt the show. But, yeah, they haven't had, like, a major television series since then. Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. Over in the comic book world, gosh, you heard about the Saga 12 kind of snafu poop storm that's been going on regarding that?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't available off of the digital devices stores. You know, if you wanted to get it on, you know, digitally, you would have to go to Comixology's website, you know, on the desktop computer and download it, you know, onto your iPad or you know, whatever device you use. But you couldn't, you know, order it directly through, like, the portable devices. And everybody was saying, oh, it's Apple's fault. Apple, you know, banned Saga 12. Because Apple recently, you know, censored a bunch of these French comic books that they got recently. But then, it comes out that it wasn't Apple after all. It was Comixology that had put the ban on it. And then the CEO basically came out. Basically, he quoted as saying, you know, that he had done it. But then after hearing from Apple this morning, we can say that our interpretation of its policies were mistaken. That Saga 12 would be made available in the App Store. Basically, the new interpretation is being applied retroactively as Image's Sex Number 1, which had previously not been sold in the App Store, is available now, as is Saga 12. Mm-hmm. So they apologized to Brian K. Vaughan and Image Comics for any confusion they may have caused. Mm-hmm. Because initially all these people were, you know, angry at Apple regarding the situation.
Right.
And it is kind of really weird regarding it. You know, because Apple is kind of strict. Obviously they, you know, did do some editing to these French comics in order to make them available. Mm-hmm. So do you think maybe it's a case of such backlash occurring that Apple relented but wanted Comixology to take the fall in regards to it? It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's tough to know because this all had to do with some sort of lesbian sex scenes or something that were available in that issue.
Right.
And I just kind of find it funny that, you know, because I've seen a lot more suggestive stuff come through Comixology than that. And So I was really kind of surprised to hear about all this business.
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the freaky, maybe I'm being politically incorrect, but Batgirl number 19, one of your favorite books, is going to have its first transgender. It's not the actual first transgender character in comics, but it's going to be the first one for the Big Two universe.
Yeah, that book came out already, and I've read what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. The character Alyssa Yao, Barbara Gordon's roommate, reveals that she's a trans woman in the scene with Gordon in the issue. Mm-hmm. Writer Gail Simone said in an interview with Wired that she pitched the idea to DC co-publisher Dan Didio, who quickly approved. In an interview, Simone describes the lack of diversity in comics as an existential threat.
Mm-hmm.
She says, quote, "It's the issues of superhero comics," she said. "Look, we have a problem most media don't have, which is that almost all the tentpoles we build our industry upon were created over half a century ago, at a time when characters were almost without exception white, cisgendered, straight, on and on. It's fine. It's great that people love those characters. But if we only did build around them, then we'd look like an episode of the Andy Griffith Show for all eternity."
Mm-hmm.
End quote. Simone said she was planning to introduce a transgender hero into mainstream comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting. No comment, Wayne.
No, well, you know, Gail Simone is back, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
On Batgirl. She took her two issues off, and I read the issue, and it was interesting. Actually, the more shocking thing to me has to do with the end of the issue, and since it's been out for a little while now, we can talk about it, that apparently her brother, who is quite the nasty, the younger James Gordon, gets his spine snapped, and he ends up in the ocean, and we don't know if he's going to come back or not, but if he is, he's going to be like she was.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries very hard to kill him because the mother has decided, you know, Barbara Gordon's mother has come back. And when the younger James Gordon visits her in the hospital, she realizes that he's going to do nothing except kill people. And so he tells Barbara to go ahead and kill him because in order to stop him from murdering other people. And that ends up kind of interestingly. She does her very best to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not quite sure whether he's going to be alive or not. You know, there's no body. Whenever there's no body, you can't be 100% certain what's going on. So that was the more surprising thing to me than the lesbian roommate. I was sort of thought, oh, okay.
A transgender woman.
Well, yeah, I guess that's
a transgender woman.
Yeah, I that didn't do much for me. I mean, you know,
we like the hype things. I'm sure the press probably covered the story. They covered everything except for everything you described that happened at the end with Gordon. But there's this transgender woman.
Yeah, who cares? That stuff to me is just sort of that's sensationalism.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The great thing about the internet is that anybody can be a writer. The worst thing about the internet is that anybody can be a writer.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So there you go.
True.
All right. In other comic book news, Avatar Press has announced the June 19th debut of Extinction Parade, a new ongoing comic book series written by Max Brooks, who will debut in comic shops on the day before World War Z. It's a big budget adaptation of Brooks Beck's best-selling novel. Mm-hmm. It's going to debut in theaters across the country. That's talking about World War Z. Brooks, who also wrote the Zombie Survival Guide, is teaming up with artist Raul, I can't even pronounce it. They get a lot of Brazilian and foreign, you know, artists at Avatar, but Raulo Caceres, to create the Extinction Parade comics. Mm-hmm. Extinction Parade is set in a world where humanity is on the verge of extinction due to the depredation of zombie hordes. Mm-hmm. When another undead race with a slightly more symbiotic relation to humans decide that it's time to intervene in order to save their blood supply, a decision that leads to a war between vampires and zombies. So there you go. Max Brooks is, of course, Mel Brooks' son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he worked very well for himself, obviously. Mm-hmm. He loves his zombies. The Zombie Survival Guide, World War Z, which is now being a film, and The Extinction Parade, which is a zombie vampire battle story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hope they don't run out of zombies ideas.
Well, I don't know. Walking Dead and all this stuff is still going strong, so I have a feeling that zombies are here for a while. They're kind of taking the place of vampires.
Yes, that is true. So it would be interesting to see where he moves from zombies afterwards.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll start, like, you know, doing his dad's films as zombies.
Yeah.
Like a zombie version of Blazing Saddles or something.
Well, that'd be weird.
That would be weird. All right. Other announcements. Cartoon Books has announced a complete edition of RASL by Eisner Award-winning cartoonist Jeff Smith, who also worked on Bone.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be published September 2013 with a major marketing campaign. It's going to be a 472-page full-color hardcover book, big oversized, 7.5 inches wide and 10 inches tall. It's going to retail for $40. Well, almost $40. It's $39.95. It was originally published in black and white serialized format intermittently. It started in 2007. And it spread out over 4 years, 15 issues, that is.
Yeah.
Today, Jeff Smith has also released several collections of the series, including 4 trade paperbacks, along with smaller pocketbook versions, as well as a limited hardcover edition of Volume 1. But this is a definitive.
Uh-huh.
The definitive.
They did the same thing with Bone. They came out with color editions
after
he had done black and white for a long time. Rassel didn't grab my attention nearly as much as Bone did. Bone was a much more interesting and a much longer series than Rassel has been. It's okay. It's about a guy who jumps dimensions, basically, and he's looking for his girlfriend.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a lot more Bone material out there in the world than Rassel.
Yeah.
Material. Yeah. And then Image Comics is releasing in June the definitive collection of the comic book Moriarty.
Yes.
Daniel Corey was the creator of that. You had Anthony Disidu, that's how it's pronounced, and butcher that name.
Mm-hmm.
There was even a chapter that Mike Fosberg did the artwork for.
Right, right.
And he did like those illustrations you saw in HBO Tales from the Crypt. He's been doing a lot of other cool stuff as well, too.
Mm.
And it's really good. It's about Sherlock Holmes' greatest nemesis, Moriarty.
Mm-hmm.
And it ran for 9 issues, the series. So they all get collected. There was 2 trade paperbacks before.
Mm-hmm.
So they all get collected into 1 big hardcover book along with some extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to that.
That was a good book. I missed that book. I wish there had been more.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, the Image model, basically, you are supporting and creating it itself. You know, Image will front, like, the printing money, but you're paying the artist, you're paying the letterer. You know, you're spending your time getting this comic book made, and then, you know, Image, of course, isn't giving you the printing costs. They're fronting it, so they take that money from the initial orders. So whatever's left over, you know, you have to pay to the artist, the letterer, or hopefully yourself. You have to be doing something, you know, hopefully this is going towards you. Or maybe you're not. Maybe you're working a job while doing this, and so you're putting all your money towards it. But it still has to be profitable. And a lot of comic books, you know, don't make it past 8 issues now.
Right.
You know, a lot of Boom Studio books get canceled in that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, he does have something else in the works. It's going to be a nice science fiction tale. I don't want to say too much.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it for the news. Not as action-packed adventure-y as last week, but definitely controversial in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
What about yourself? Any interesting stories going on?
Yeah, there's a couple I've got, there, at least three of them that are interesting.
Yeah.
Every September, DC does something special with their New 52 titles. And it looks like, according to rumor, they're going to have Villains Month at DC. There's a movie coming out about DC's villains. Isn't it called Necessary Evil, the Villains of DC Comics? And probably to go on in conjunction with that, they're going to have in September all focusing on the villains of the different books. And every ongoing comic will receive a new number one and a new star, a bad guy, in September, continuing their now annual tradition of major events that month. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see. So I guess what they'll do is, I guess they'll have Batman number one again, but this time it'll feature the Joker based on what we see in the pictures. And of course, that doesn't mean it's going to be necessarily current things. We might see historical things about how the villain came to be and stuff like that. So that's a big deal. So I'm going to be interested in that. I always liked your September events. I always think they're kind of fun. Also, they're talking about the Man of Steel is setting the tone for future DC movies, according to the executive from Warner Brothers, Jeff Robinov. He's basically setting this up to say that this is going to function like the Marvel movies have from now on. That the Nolan Batman trilogy was set up to be its own separate thing, that they weren't going to have anything else going on.
Right.
But as far as the Man of Steel goes in future movies, you're going to start to see indications of other heroes in the movie universe.
Okay.
So that's what they're trying to do. They're aiming towards a Justice League movie.
Yep.
They thought that Nolan would be involved with it, Christopher Nolan, but apparently he's not, as we stand now.
Oh, really?
And he's not going to do that. He's got off to other fish to fry, and he's
right.
You're never going to know what they're going to do. I guess I was kind of hoping that they would go the opposite way, that they have Justice League, and then they would break them off into different people. But I guess since Marvel's proved that this model, where you start off with the individual characters, works, that they're going to go and do that too. So, some people are quite mad about Man of Steel. I'm not. I'm really looking forward to it. I think that Christopher Nolan kind of, I loved his the Dark Knight movies, and so for me, I'm dying to see what he's going to do with Superman.
But he's not involved, though, with Superman, or was he a producer? But Zack Snyder is the...
Yeah, he's a producer. Zack Snyder was the one directing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be fascinated to see. I mean, anything that Nolan touches, I'm kind of interested. Even his brother, like Jonathan Nolan, is behind Person of Interest, which is one of my favorite TV shows. So
yeah.
When the name Nolan's on there, I'm going to kind of go in there and see what's going on at least.
Yeah, cool. Definitely.
So, and speaking of the Marvel movies, Iron Man 3 is not far away. And according to Deadline, there's released tracking numbers of what they're expecting it's going to do in the opening weekend. And the first weekend, they expect it to make a $125 million-plus opening.
Wow. Worldwide or national?
It doesn't say. I think it's good just in the – I think they're only estimating the states based on all the stuff. They're talking about the fact that this would be on par with Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that may be less because when the Mandarin's involved, I think more fans are going to be interested in the Whiplash from Iron Man 2. So I actually think it's going to do better than that. Iron Man 2 eventually went on to get $312 million domestically and $623 million if you include the whole globe in that one. So but the only one that Marvel film that ended up with a higher opening weekend was The Avengers, which started off with a $207.4 million weekend.
Right.
Of course, Avengers made $1.5 billion with a B.
Yeah.
You know, and that did real well. And so it's going to be curious to see after Avengers, how's that going to affect the rest of the Marvel movies?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, definitely it helps those characters overall. Mm-hmm. Gives them something that they're not, you know, having to carry on their own, all the different actors. Basically, they can go back to doing another Avengers movie if another single film is underperforming, so...
Yeah. This is supposedly the beginning of what they call Phase 2 of the Marvel movies, that there's supposed to be some kind of a different thing going on with it.
Oh, yeah, but they're going to have, like, these lesser-known things, you know, like,
yeah.
I forgot what's going to be Wave 3, but, you know.
Well, Ant-Man's going to be one.
Basically.
And they're going to have Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
And stuff like that. So I'm less excited about that stuff. Ant-Man, there's drawings going around the internet now, whether it's actually the movie's uniform or not. But that's all. Everything kind of looks like Iron Man now. Ant-Man's uniform doesn't look like he does in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
It looks much more like an Iron Man suit.
Mm.
And, you know, he's got the little antennas. But other than that, it's pretty much, it's just like there's a picture going around of the Falcon, supposedly going to be in the Captain America movie. And he's got what looks like an Iron Man outfit, too.
Right. Interesting.
So everybody looks like Iron Man. I guess since Iron Man did well, we're going to make everybody wear. It reminds me of that old Marvel cartoon where everybody had like Transformer uniforms where they turned in.
Right.
Ant-Man was actually in charge of the Avengers, and they all had their little, they would turn into Iron Man type outfits. And I was like, oh, that didn't go over very well, but I guess they've decided that's what they're going to do here. I guess it's to be more realistic.
Sure, absolutely.
Anyway, that's all the news that I have. Why don't we shift over to the previews? What comics are you looking forward to, John Lucas?
Sure. This is for April 24th, 2013. Over on the Boom Studios side, there's Deathmatch number 5. And if you haven't been reading Deathmatch, you can read the first 4 issues in the trade paperback that goes on sale for $10.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I love that book. I really think that's a great book.
So, yeah, definitely. It's more than some kind of stupid Avengers arena kind of story. It's actually, there's a lot more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fan of the Cartoon Network regular show, the first issue comic goes on sale. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of covers for that, actually. let me count here. There's a pre-order cover, an A, B, C, D, E, and an F cover, a variant cover. Mm-hmm. Or you could just buy the complete cover box set for $24.99. taking a tip from IDW's My Little Pony comic books, that as well, too.
Yep.
Probably expect these to go to second and third printings with box sets for each.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how many kids actually have $25 to throw around to buy complete box sets of these things. That must be for the adults who they think watch this show.
Yeah, definitely. But it is out there if you want to. And they, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny, too, because the original Adventure Time, you know, kind of came out there, and the demand was huge, but it was way under order because retailers didn't quite know. A lot of them probably never heard of it and were very, surprised to see the kind of turnout for it. And mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see what the initial orders are for this, because I think it's going to be a different case.
Oh, I think you're right. I think this time there's going to be a whole lot more of them around.
Yeah. Over on the Dark Horse side, we have a mm-hmm. hardcover collection of the Creep.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice series. You should check it out. Somebody I remember reading on Bleeding Cool saying that anthologies don't work after, mm-hmm. The failure of Jimmy Palmiotti's creator-owned Heroes. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily true, because Dark Horse Presents is at issue number 23.
Right.
There you go. For your Star Wars stuff, you have Star Wars Legacy Volume 2, Prisoner of the Floating World, number 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's on sale. Over on DC, we have the Batman Illustrated by Neil Adams, Volume 2, trade paperback. I like Neil Adams. That's very interesting. Great that they have the second volume coming out for that.
Yeah, I think I have the hardcover of that. That's a long time ago they put out hardcovers of these.
Yeah, they're not really good at doing hardcover trades. They usually wait a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but finally, the trade paperback is out.
Mm, good.
And finally, what's out is Before Watchmen Comedian number 6.
Yay.
But it's the one with the best-looking art. Or no, I think Rorschach is the one with the best-looking art.
Mm-hmm.
But it's finally out. It's issue 6 of 6. J.G. Mm-hmm. Jones does a regular cover, and then Raphael Albuquerque does a variant for it.
Mm.
So you can check it out.
Cool.
Then we have the last issue of I, Vampire with number 19.
Mm.
It's got a fold-out gatefold cover for the gatefold month.
Mm-hmm.
Final issue, you're not going to see Joshua Hill Fialco doing anything for DC, unfortunately.
No, based after Green Lantern.
No, that sucks, too. Justice League Dark number 19 is on sale. I guess it's not the final issue, but it can't be too much longer for the Savage Hawkman.
Yeah.
Number 19 goes on sale as well, too, with the fold-out. Have you been following it since its latest set of creators on board?
Yeah, I've followed Savage Hawkman since the start.
Yeah.
And I like the character. Now, he's going to be integrated, he already is. He's into Justice League of America.
Right.
And so the character is going to be over there. It's going to be fun to see Geoff Johns writing the character again.
Yeah.
And, the Savage Hawkman is basically the way that he wrote Hawkman for a while. And it was great fun. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be sorry that the book's going to end, but on the other hand, he'll be a good member of Justice League of America.
Sure. Is the new creative team, is it better than when it was with Rob Liefeld? Or?
I don't know. To me, it's been pretty consistent. Tony S. Daniel started off with the book.
Yes.
And I liked what he was doing, and I liked Mr. Liefeld, when he wasn't screaming on Twitter, I liked what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a problem with it, but, who knows what Mr. Liefeld's off to. He's been kind of quiet recently, so that's a good thing.
I want to also mention Superman number 19 goes on sale. There is a Al Jaffe Mad variant cover.
Yeah, they're doing that these days. It's kind of like Marvel with the babies cover.
Right.
They had that Mad covers. I noticed they've done that. The Flash also has that this month.
Yeah.
And when I went to the bookstore, I noticed that there were several of them that had it in the last couple of weeks. They've had these Mad covers. Now, I don't know many people who order them. I went to a store I haven't gone to recently, and I saw all these Mad covers. And, of course, they're basically a little more than cover price they want for it. But I don't know how many people would want to buy a Mad cover for this.
That's interesting. I do like Al Jaffe, but, I don't know what a retailer would charge for an Al Jaffe Superman number 19 cover. I do know what's interesting is that since, we did the last podcast, they released the actual numbers for the books for the top 300. And I saw that Saga outsold Superman. So,
how about that?
Yeah, Saga at 50,000 copies edged out Superman. So it'll be interesting. It was like Saga number 11 compared to Superman number 18. But still, it's still very impressive.
Yeah,
I wonder if Al Jaffe's going to turn the tide.
I doubt that. Nothing against Mr. Jaffe. There's a Mad show on Cartoon Network.
Yes.
Based on the magazine. And sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's absolutely flat. But I just don't know how many people are into Mad. Was more popular in previous generations than it is now.
Totally. I mean, I'm from that previous generation. That's how I even know who he is. I think people even read magazines. Because you used to be able to fold that thing in the back to make it picture.
Yeah.
You still fold the size, inwards and bend it to create a funny answer to the joke.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. That's kind of like a lost art there.
Yeah, sadly.
All right, moving on. Dynamite Comics. We have the Mass number 6 of 8. And then the Shadow number 12. So you got your pulp stuff going on there with plenty of Alex Ross covers and covers from Tim Bradstreet, Sean Chen, and Franco Villa, and all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right. IDW only has My Little Pony. It's a My Little Pony week for IDW.
It's a brony week.
Yeah, it's a brony week. There's only 3 covers, too, for issue number 6.
Mm-hmm.
Image Comics. We have Jupiter's Legacy, which is a Mark Millar book. Mm-hmm. Mark Millar is branching out from the Millarville universe.
Mm-hmm.
He is doing a book. It's a big deal for Image because, like last year when they snatched Grant Morrison and they snatched Ed Brubaker, now they scratched Mark Millar
mm-hmm.
with Frank Quitely.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the artwork, and it's supposed to be about these kids, having to live up to the legacy, or a kid having to live up to the legacy of a very famous superhero.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be a really big deal. Order numbers are projected to be really huge for this, and there's also a set of covers from some very well-known people.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Frank Quitely, the interior artist, does a cover. You have Ryan Hitch, Dave Johnson, Phil Noto. And then, of course, there's a black and white variant cover as well,
mm-hmm.
number 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Skull Kickers has been renamed Mighty Skull Kickers. The relaunch is issue number 1, kind of a way to, get that out there to people. Because, people like buying issue number 1s. So,
of course.
That's how that works. It's still mm-hmm. a popular series on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is interesting. Stefan Sejic, I know how to pronounce it because I've worked with the guy. He has a New York Comic Con Tri-Tick sign set.
Mm-hmm.
What that is, I had to look that up, actually. It's $30, and what it is it means like it's a portfolio art piece in 3 parts. And it is, it's a wide, kind of art piece, and you basically have these 3, demons, up on the side, and there's like an art piece for each one of those. So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then Image Comics has the adaptation of the Julia Roberts, Nick Nolte movie, I Love Trouble. No, why? Not really. Called I Love Trouble. I don't think it's tied to that movie. But I would think so. And then finally, on the Marvel side, we have A plus X number 7, All New X-Men number 8, Avengers number 10, Avengers Arena, if you like a ripoff of the Hunger Games, it goes on sale. Castle, Richard Castle's Deadly Storm, if you're a fan of the show, that's available. Being resolicited is The Dark Tower, The Gunslinger, The Battle of Tull, trade paperback. Deadpool number 8, good series. Deadpool Killustrated 4 of 4, where he kills off all your favorite Marvel characters. We have Fantastic Four number 7, FF number 6. You have your Guardians of the Galaxy number 2 with its various covers. No baby covers for some reason. Variant. Journey into the Mystery 651. New Avengers. Power Bureaus number 1 and 2 have second printings that go on sale. Sounds like something Mark Millar would do. I have no idea. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 22. And then Rick Remender's Uncanny Avengers number 7. And if you haven't been reading it so far, there is the Uncanny Avengers Volume 1, the Red Shadow hardcover available for Premiere Edition. And that's it for me.
All right, let me go backwards. We'll go on from there. By the way, the All New X-Men number 8 is a second printing variant cover for number 8. That issue has become out, just to clarify that. Other than that, you know, as far as Marvel goes, there's not a lot that I'm really all that excited about. In fact, I don't buy anything. I used to get All New X-Men, but I got kind of bored with it. I kept wondering how they can talk to each other. They're two timelines crossing over each other. I can't figure out how they do that.
Well, check out Uncanny Avengers. I actually enjoyed the first issue.
Oh, that's good. I've been reading his Captain America, which has been interesting. I read the Castle comic. Something about the book didn't do that much for me, so I'm not so much in it. Anyway, getting to Image, Clone I really like. Clone number 6 is out. The first 5 have been really good. I really like that book. And then a lot of people that I know at the bookstores and stuff are interested in 5 Weapons, which is kind of a teens turning into superhero kind of, I wouldn't go superhero, maybe ninja kind of things better. Number 3 of 5 is out. Invincible 102, which is, of course, by Mr. Kirkman. That's going on. Manhattan Projects, Jonathan Hickman. That's a good book. I like that. Nick Spencer's Morning Glories, number 26, is pretty good. And that does it for Image for me. Bionic Woman, number 9, which I like, is out from Dynamite. And some of the DC ones that I'm kind of fascinated by. All-Star Western, I always like, number 19. Arrow, which is a digital first, number 6, is out. There is Batman Incorporated number 10. That's going to end with number 13, which is kind of interesting. And then Batman The Dark Knight number 19, which is really good. That will be the Greg Hurwitz writes that, and Ethan Van Sciver is doing the artwork on that these days. I mentioned The Flash before Flash is out, which is a good one. Firestorm, which is coming to an end, is Fury of Firestorm, The Nuclear Man. It used to be The Nuclear Man. That's going to end shortly. Injustice Gods Among Us number 4, based on the video game, which there are a lot of trailers they keep putting out for that. So they had put out a Green Lantern one recently, which was kind of interesting. Katana, based on a character who's in Justice League. Red Lanterns, number 19. That's changing. This is probably, I think, the last one before they change creative teams. And Talon, which is a great book. And Detective, number 19, which was actually issue number, like the 900th issue of Detective, if you did the Marvel way and counted everything all together. He did a story in which he talked about Bane going into that. I don't know if that's going to happen in this cover. They're going to follow up to that, but that's coming, which I thought was interesting. And Teen Titans, number 19. And then we get to Dark Horse Mind Management. I always have to explain to people, management's not spelled out like management. It's MGMT. If you get MGMT, you'll find it. Otherwise, if you look Mind Management, you won't find it.
Right.
Because that's not what it's called. And then wrap up with Boom Studios. They've got Freelancers number 5, which I like. That's a good book. Also, Peanuts number 8, which is a good thing for that. It makes sense to translate that into a comic instead of having it in a daily, even though they run the old Mr. Schultz comics in the paper.
Yeah.
And finally, Mr. Wade's Deed and Mrs. Peel number 7.
Now, I don't think he's actually writing it anymore. He did the first miniseries. The miniseries was Grant Morrison, but he did the first 0 issue. But I think you have Caleb Monroe, who's the writer for that.
That's good. Well, I like the character, so I pick up the books, which I enjoy.
Sure.
Mr. Wade's got plenty else on his plate.
Yes.
Anything else that we should talk about before we call it quits?
Oh, there's also the Steed and Mrs. Peel Volume 1 trade paperback.
Yeah, that's true. If you haven't caught the first issues, you can get that.
Yes.
Okay, and on that note, we'll call it quits for this week's news and previews. As always, Gianluca, thanks so much. Hope you continue to feel better.
Thank you very much. I hope you continue to feel better, too.
Yeah.
And that's it for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have an interview with Cole Haddon, the creator of Space Gladiator, a great Kickstart comic that I really liked. We had a fun conversation about that comic and other things that he's working on, so I'm sure you'll want to listen. But until then, keep reading your comics.
You'll never win, Joker. I'll always be here to stop you.